Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This JS Online and PackersNews.com podcast is brought to you by Potawatomi Casino. Get on island time to win a Caribbean cruise at Potawatomi. Thursdays in October and November. More at paysbig.com/islandtime. That's paysbig.com/islandtime. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the JS Online and PackersNews.com podcast. I'm back, Tom Silverstein with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, here with Jim Ossarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as well. And Jim, what do we have to say about the Green Bay Packers this week?
I almost feel like we can rerun some of this pre-week San Francisco podcast to a degree. It's a home game against an uncommon opponent that they should win, get well, if you will, you know, and get back to 500. It's just kind of, it reminds me a lot of that run-up. You know, a lot of the same issues are still plaguing this team. Yeah. But frankly, it's a game they should win at home.
Yeah, and as you brought up while we were getting ready to do the podcast, this is a 5-4 team they're right. playing, and they're 10-point favorites against a 5-4 team. Now, granted, the Packers have played probably a much tougher schedule than the Dolphins have. But I always think of whenever the Packers have a game against a team they should beat, they tend to play down to their level and make it closer than it should be. And this is a game they should win in all, they should. Any estimation they should win. Right?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, for Packers fans who are maybe a little unfamiliar with the Dolphins, they are 5-4, but two wins against the Jets, one win against Oakland, a week one victory over Houston, which now it looks good, Houston winning six straight, but rewind it back 9 weeks. That's Deshaun Watson, or Tennessee, excuse me, beating Tennessee 27-20. You know, again, that's week one. You almost throw all that stuff out. And then, of course, an overtime win against the Bears, which really.
In like 95 degree heat. Yeah. The Bears just wore down, I think.
Yeah, right? And actually, after that game is when the Bears just kind of decided, hey, we need to shut down Khalil Mack a little bit. I mean, that ankle was really bothering him. And really, that's the last time this Dolphins offense did anything. You know, it's – and Albert Wilson catch and run almost over 100-plus yards, and now Wilson's on IR.
Yeah. Yes, their best wide receiver. So, as – you know, the Packers have their own problems – I mean, it helps. Let's talk a little bit more about the Dolphins, then we'll get into the Packers. So their quarterback is going to be Brock Osweiler again.
Oh, I'm tired of seeing this guy, Tom.
You've seen him a lot.
I've come from the AFC, and I've just seen too much Brock Osweiler. I was really disappointed to find out I'm going to have to see this guy again. He's not good.
Yeah, no.
I'll start there. I mean, he's a backup quarterback for a reason. Hasn't thrown a touchdown in 2 weeks. I really don't know much what else to say. I mean, it's been, you know, he's thrown three interceptions in 4 weeks. I mean, he's just kind of a guy.
I mean, it really, when you go into a game plan against this guy, you go, I'm going to stop Frank Gore and Barner. And if Brock Osweiler beats me, Right. Mazel tov, you know?
Right, I mean, and really, he shouldn't beat you.
No,
I mean,
it better not be.
No, this is a game for the Packers' run defense, and which frankly might match up well for them because you can get Antonio Morrison in the game, maybe give Blake Martinez a week to get that ankle ready for Seattle. Mm-hmm. And you really focus on your run D because, yeah, it's Kenyon Drake, it's Frank Gore. And look, those guys are good. 4.2 yards per carry for the Aegis Wonder and 4.8 for Kenyon Drake. I mean, that they can run the ball.
Yeah.
So you don't – but that's it. Like, Kenny Stills is a deep threat, but that's all they have. Like, Devontae Parker is a name Packers fans might know, but he's been in the doghouse.
Yeah.
He doesn't – Adam Gase said a few weeks ago, Tom, we're only playing him because we have to.
Yeah.
Because we need healthy bodies.
He was available for trade, apparently, yeah. According to one personnel guy who was telling me who some of the guys, clear guys on the block were.
Yeah.
And he was one of them. So, you know, they don't have a long-term investment in him. Yeah. Offensively, you know, I don't know what we're going to get out of them, what we're going to see from them. But it's probably not going to be very good.
No, I would definitely focus on, you know, that it's that run game. Drake's got 31 catches. Danny Amendola is a name people know.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging less than 10 yards a reception. I mean, think about this NFL nowadays. Like, that's I mean...
That's pretty bad.
That means you're just the guy who's available underneath. I mean, there's really, yes, credit for the 5-4 and the 3-0 start, but at this juncture, Tom, I really think if Mike Pettine's group can't dictate at home, there's bigger issues that have cropped up the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, and I was just looking at their stats. They've thrown between Osweiler and Tannehill. They've thrown 8 interceptions.
Right.
So and 16 touchdowns, so half as many interceptions. So
right.
If the Packers, who are in a turnover slump, need to come away with some turnovers in this game.
And that's why it reminds me a little bit of San Francisco, because look, for all the issues that HaHa Clinton Dix had, the one trait he had was turnovers.
Right.
And when was Kevin King's interception against San Francisco?
Yeah,
I mean, think about it. That's been a little while. That's October 15th.
Yeah, that's right. When did Alexander have that interception? That was against.
We can't even think about it. I mean, put it this way: it's been a little while since these guys have had
Buffalo.
I mean, Buffalo. That's before. So this Packers defense is not turning the ball over, and Miami's quarterback. Is Brock Osweiler throws interceptions.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. If you can limit the running game, limit the play action, and make him throw it, odds are you're going to get a few chances to catch it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, well, let's go over the Packers injury situation before we head into analyzing them. Today, practice, only Kevin King missing.
Which is, again, amazing considering how beat up they were against New England.
It's crazy. Now, you mentioned it, Blake Martinez. I talked to him today. He showed me his ankle. It's just puffed up like crazy. But he's practiced to some degree both days. And I think they'll make a decision on Sunday whether to play him. I sort of agree with you. I think that you're going to. You mentioned it. I think they're going to hold him out because they got that Seattle game coming on Thursday right after. And say what you want, that's a more important game.
It is. And again, when you're looking at available linebackers and what offenses do, it's Brock Osweiler's not Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And the running game, while it is good, I think Antonio Morrison can fill that role.
That's what he does.
He plays
the run.
Yeah.
He's a physical player. I thought he had a pretty good game against New England.
I thought so too.
You just don't want him matched up with backs or whatever.
Right. And while a guy like a Kenyon Drake is a receiving threat, I think that's where you see the matchup of a Josh Jones. Mm-hmm. And Jones even talked about it, where he said, look, that's the guy that the Dolphins will send out in the patterns. And frankly, he's like, that's the guy I can cover.
Yeah.
So, you know, as with the release of Jermaine Whitehead, Jones seems like he's the natural next step as Ibrahim Campbell, a new signee, is sort of caught up to speed a little bit this week.
Right. So stopping Frank Gore will be a priority. I think they probably will play. They may play a lot of base defense with three defensive linemen, or they may play a nickel with three defensive linemen, and then they can use Josh Jones where Jermaine Whitehead was. He's a far more physical player than Jermaine Whitehead and can play the run, you know, 220-pound guy. So yeah. I could see them doing that. I could see him using Oren Burks, Corey Toomer a little bit. This is if Martinez is out.
Yeah, I think so. And again, it's just sort of, you know, Mike Pettine has spoken for weeks about matchup-based football, and I just think this is one of those games where, I mean, Blake Martinez has proven he's a guy you want available. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you're going to play it safe,
yeah,
this is a week to do it, because you're right. It's a game they should win. It's a game where the linebackers, you know, again, it is a running attack, but Seattle just presents different challenges. I think you want your full complement, especially, hey, look, it's a short week. You don't know what your linebackers might look like coming out of Sunday.
No.
So if you can avoid Blake Martinez putting any extra stress on that, give him an extra, it's only 3 days.
Yeah.
Might as well.
So one subject that seemed to be on people's minds, both in the social media sphere and actually in the media around here, is the production of Clay Matthews and Nick Perry. So as long as we're on defense, let's talk about that a little bit. So Perry has 1.5 sacks, and Matthews has 2.5. So they have 4 sacks together.
Oh, you just got some Packers fans being like, well, what are they paid?
Yeah. No. Yeah. So my question is, is the Packers' pass rush really bad? Are they a bad pass rush?
It's interesting. If you were to ask me this question after Los Angeles, mm-hmm. I would say they had turned a corner, you know, because they did get to Jared Goff, and they did make him move and scramble. Against Tom Brady, I don't recall Tom Brady being under a whole lot of heat.
Where do you... This is a question for everybody out there, but I'm going to present it to you. Where do you think the Packers rank in sacks in the NFL?
Would say just about middle of the pack. I think that Buffalo game where they had the 7. And then I do think, you know, Los Angeles, they had a handful. So I think a couple of games have put them middle of the pack-ish.
Okay. They rank third.
Third
wow. in sacks per play.
Okay.
So in the
yeah,
number
see,
of sacks
and I cover this team, and that's my gut.
I didn't
yeah.
know that. Believe me, I look at the stats, and I was absolutely shocked to hear that. Yeah, you get the 7 sacks, but, geez, Minnesota had 10 against Detroit, and they still rank, you know, the Packers rank third. Now, that's per play, not total sacks, but that's more important because...
Yeah, the per play is probably where is the key caveat there. I'm thinking more total in general because it's 25, you know, which is okay. But, again, it's a little interesting when, you know, Blake Martinez and Kyler Fackrell are your team leaders.
Yeah. Well, it's...
And Kenny Clark in there.
It says a lot about what Pettine does on defense.
Right.
And that is, he's not traditional in how he's going to bring people. He's going to try to bring people that you don't expect to go. He's not going to bring the same guy every time. He's not just going to rush Matthews and Perry every single time.
Which, you know, is a little bit as advertised, right, with the Rex Ryan background, if you will. And And, you know, look, the Packers sixth, you know, we not just sacks per play, but, you know, their 25 total is sixth in the league. I guess in terms of Matthews and Perry, though, I wonder if some of that's a function of that they can't do it as often or as consistently on their own. Because, look, if those guys were winning consistently, Tom, if they were dominant rush linebackers, it wouldn't matter if the offense knows that Clay Matthews is rushing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Nobody, like, you know, we know Von Miller is coming. Does, you know, so I think it's, on one hand, it's a compliment to Mike Pettine and the scheme that he has developed, perhaps quietly, but I think it also speaks a little bit toward where Matthews and Perry are in 2018.
Yeah, and I'm just looking up their pressures. I keep how many pressures guys have, and you'd probably be surprised that, you know, now this is my definition of pressures, so, which my definition is if they move the quarterback off the spot or if they're sort of in his face. Some people call those hurries versus a pressure is when you really make the guy leave the pocket. So I kind of combine them. But who do you think is leading in pressures?
Among the linebackers or
among
overall?
Everybody?
I would say Mike Daniels.
Yeah, good call. By a lot. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And, like, the next highest, I believe, would be Kenny Clark with 6. And I'm not seeing a lot. I see a couple for Perry and a couple for Matthews. Quarterback hits. Matthews has 3, and that doesn't include his penalties. Reggie Gilbert has 3, and Nick Perry has 2, and Daniels has 2. So, you know, I don't know exactly what I think there is a little bit to be said what you were saying, that he doesn't bring Matthews and Perry as much as Capers did. He brought those guys every single down,
which might have been part of the problem.
Maybe,
you know, because that look, it's I'll equate it to a lesser degree with the Montgomery trade, where sometimes a, you know, you need to take a player from a coach. Well, sometimes a new set of eyes, a new coach with that doesn't have the loyalty, that doesn't remember Pro Bowls, that doesn't remember a 4-sack game or a 12.5 sack season, or frankly doesn't remember go get a sack in a Super Bowl, and it happens.
Right.
Mike Pettine has. He might know the history. He might have respect for the player, but he's coming in brand new, and what is he looking at? The cold, hard tape and cold, hard camp looks and what's actually in front of me. And, you know,
he may be looking at, too. So he looks at the tackle matchup and goes, okay, what's a better matchup for me, Matthews or Perry one-on-one with the tackle, or Matthews trying to eat up 2 blocks and one of his defensive backs,
fair.
Coming in, or another linebacker, an inside linebacker blitzing. You know, it very well could be that he views those guys that they're going to get enough attention that they can draw attention away from his blitzers, you know? Versus that's been better for him versus Matthews one-on-one with the tackle or Perry one-on-one with the tackle.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but I wonder.
Right. I would think all of – I would imagine it's as the coaches like to see, it's a little bit of everything to a degree, especially because they are out there. They are playing. It's not like, you know, those guys have been rotated out completely. But you have seen more Kyler Fackrell. You have seen more Reggie Gilbert. And I think – That's part of this.
Yeah.
You know, because, again, let's be honest, if those guys were capable of winning consistently or beating a double team or whatever it may be, I mean, sometimes stats don't lie.
Yeah. Okay, so we sort of saw in New England that, when I was watching the game, I was pretty down on the defense, and I think I said that after the pod on the podcast, and probably to you too. I went back and watched it, and I think the performance was better than I thought it was, simply because Tom Brady was not a huge factor in that game. I mean, if they don't fumble, if Tanyan doesn't get the roughing the punter penalty, and they don't get pinned inside their 5-yard line again, like they always seem to when they're facing a punter, it's a pretty good defensive performance.
Yeah, and I think we even kind of disagreed in the immediate aftermath of New England about mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Because I think the Patriots' ability to go that fast and to run and execute trick plays that fast out of tempo was so jarring. I agreed then, I guess now, that you're right. I mean, Brady wasn't the X factor, and you can say Josh McDaniels had to resort to some trickery to break – to break some big plays. And eventually, I think that last score, especially, the Patriots just kind of wore him down.
Yeah. The X factor in that game was the Patriots' defense. They played remarkably, and I thought they made, McCarthy and his staff, I thought they beat him up. Beat those guys up with their game plan.
Yeah, they did a better job than Wade Phillips and that sort of vaunted, $100 million Rams defense. I thought a corner almost had been turned to a degree. While the Packers left, I think, a lot of points on the board in that first half in L.A., I did think they caught a rhythm that I thought would have translated.
Yeah.
And the fumble... It did stop momentum. I mean, early in that second half, they did score. They did put together a long drive and score a touchdown, and mm-hmm. they were in the midst of another one. But they still had a whole fourth quarter. 14:52 was when that fumble happened. Yeah. I mean, they had two other possessions to make some hay, and it just didn't happen.
They did, and what was really significant about that game to me, or about the defensive performance with New England, was that they took Davante Adams out of the game. And that was brilliant. That's what Bill Belichick does. He identifies who the best player is and he takes them out. And, I thought they did put just enough pressure on Rodgers to bother him. They tried to fool him with defenses. Now, they knew they're not going to fool him all the time, but if you're constantly disguising and constantly doing it, you're going to get him a couple of times.
Yeah, and New England is so good at that with the week-to-week game planning. It is sort of next level the way Bill Belichick game plans for specific people and how quickly and how seamlessly. I mean, we mentioned the trick plays on offense. I mean, the same goes for the defense mm-hmm. and how those guys can just amoeba-like.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers was pressured. He threw the ball away a ton. There were some incompletions and some missed throws to a greater degree than we had seen leading up to it, which, again,
inaccuracy.
Yeah, it's a bigger compliment because, inarguably, it was his healthiest week since week one. Mm-hmm. He shed the brace. He practiced on a Wednesday. It was all the reasons I thought going in that he would play his best game.
Yeah.
And Bill Belichick coordinated and a better one.
And you know what? If Rodgers hits three passes that were bad throws, and admittedly he identified two of them. I'll identify the third. the Davante Adams throw into the corner of the end zone, he left short. And
was late, in my opinion.
But yeah, and was late. He said that it was a little bit... The route got changed a little bit because it was kind of a rub route where Adams goes in and then tries to run around Campbell, and Adams ran it a little flatter than it should be just because he had to. But still, Rodgers needed to put that out in the corner of the end zone, and he left it where Stephon Gilmore could get a hand on it. Then there was that deep ball to Equanimeous St. Brown, and I pronounced that correctly because I got corrected today, and Thursday, and so we're going to play a pretty hilarious clip from that. Anyway, remember that over the shoulder? He put it too far to the sideline. Equanimeous, they call it the red line. I don't know if you've ever seen it practice. They have a red line that's about four or five yards from the sideline, and it runs, you know, right down from end zone to end zone, and that's where receivers are supposed to run down when they're on the sideline. You know, then they know it gives them a little bit of room to make a catch on the sideline. So anyway, that was a bad throw, and then I thought he had Valdez Scantling on another deep one, and the one he did throw was kind of underthrown. You know, I thought he might have been able to score if you put it out there for him.
Yeah, it was. And that's the thing, and I think we've been fair in this to a degree. Is, you know, with all the issues, at least fans or even people in our business, Tom, with, you know, throwing Mike McCarthy and Joe Philbin and the offense to the Wolves. I mean, the quarterback hasn't played up to his standards.
No.
And, you know, when you have kind of this average-ish team, the quarterback needs to play at a level that he has played at in the past.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, of course, I think we both agree that if that's the case, you should turn around and hand off to a guy who can perhaps affect things and help out, which is another issue.
Would be nice. You know, it would be interesting to see if they did do that. But
yeah, I don't.
Don't put your money
on
that.
No, I don't think that's changing. So, you know, I guess we'll see, you know, if Aaron Rodgers can, you know, another week. You know, this week, as you guys listen to this, he practiced again on Wednesday, full Thursday. I think the brace, you know, there was no sort of physical setback in New England. So that makes you think, you know, more practice, more reps, getting feeling better.
Yeah. One of the things that has been addressed a lot this week is the performance of Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And, you know, his deep ball ability sort of asked. So there was also a play to Equanimeous St. Brown where it was a blitz, and Rodgers threw it up there, and it could have been a really big play, but St. Brown broke it inside instead of outside. I mean, it was like a hot read deep ball. That's the kind of thing they face, and Valdez Scantling. We'll make that kind of error as well. But anyway, that's a lead-in because I wanted you to hear wide receivers coach David Rye, because he is an interesting cat.
He is.
And it's kind of fun to listen to his him answer questions. Like you said, you might not get a ton of answers, but he was schooled us on what his receivers room is. So let's take a listen with that.
That was a great learning moment. And I'm going to say these names so you guys get them, because they'd kill me if I didn't do this. Okay, so it's Equanimeous, okay? they'll appreciate this. Equanimeous, Marquez, right? And then Jamon. You guys got that, okay? So think about the names in my room. Equanimeous, his name is Equanimeous Tristan Emotep J. St. Brown. That's his full name. And he speaks three languages.
How long did it take you to memorize that?
I didn't write it up on the board, and then I just made sure he knew that I knew it.
There you go.
But anyways, that moment in the game in New England, you know, that was a great learning moment for him. And just two things, simply put. First of all, there's a route adjustment on the play that we need to be in tune to. And then second of all, you know, they were bringing empty pressure. And so there's just a lot of thinking going on. And as he and Aaron were communicating, you know, he was playing fast, but he wasn't right on the money with what we were trying to get done. So it was a great learning moment. And he's sharp.
So those are the musings of receivers coach David Rye. I thought it would be fun for people to listen to him. Interesting guy.
Yeah, and if any of you guys out there listening are follow or on Twitter, follow Marquez Valdez Scantling. I mean, he's actually put it out there how to pronounce his name because people, not you or I, but other media people have continued to call him by the wrong name.
Yeah.
So maybe that was part of this too, where David's like, you know what, let me get my guys here.
I got that one right. I got Equanimeous wrong. I was calling him Equanimeous just because I'm from Wisconsin and I have a bad Wisconsin accent, I'm sure.
Or as Aaron Rodgers says, EQ and MVS.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I like how he's written the names up on the board, and he made sure that he knew he knew them. So we've talked pretty much about the offense. I think let's just talk about what this game might come down to, and then we can wrap it up. I think, one, they have to be really careful about throwing interceptions. This team has 15 picks, I think, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Pretty
Matt
good.
Burke's, yeah, Matt Burke's group is, it's, you know, you're going to look up the stats and it's kind of middle of the road. There were, you know, in the midst of their losing streak, losing ways, you know, was Adam Gase going to make a change? But, you know, there's some guys, Kiko Alonso, Cameron Wake, Robert Quinn, if Rashad Jones decides he wants to play.
Right, yes.
He just decided to just leave the game last week.
Yeah, not so, go back in.
Right.
Yeah.
you know, so they've got issues over there, but there is some talent.
Yeah, and really, this is the game. I think I've said this every week. But if they don't run the ball in this game, then everybody should be fired, like they say on our blog. Because
even you.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are averaging, they rank 28th in the league in run defense, 136.1 yards per game. So, I mean, really, if McCarthy doesn't give Aaron Jones, and I know they'll probably load up the box, but, you know, if they don't, they should run it however they're going to run it. It's going to be cold, you know, it's not going to be the best of conditions, so... All right, we're either going to be fired or we'll be correct. I don't know which it's going to be.
I agree. I just keep going back again to that Monday night game, and I just think that's how it's going to play out. Like, you know, when it's going to look like the Packers are the better team, and yet for some reason Miami hangs around. For whatever reason that is, whether it be another untimely special teams mistake, which we've seen week after week, whether it be just red zone stoppages for whatever reason, and Mason Crosby trots out there. But it is Brock Osweiler, and he's going to give you the ball, and he's going to do some dumb stuff that stops the Dolphins' offense, you know, for you, if you will, if the Packers, for whatever reason, you know, have their own issues. So I think, yeah, Tom, I think it's going to be kind of ugly. But yet the Packers get the win and, you know, quickly turn their sights to Seattle in a really, really big NFC wild card game implications.
Do you think they cover the spread?
No.
Yeah, I'm sort of leaning that way too.
Yeah. I think, they were 11-point favorites against the 49ers, pre-Nick Mullen 49ers even.
Yeah.
And had their issues. You know, I think they'll get at the pressure we've talked about, and Tremont Williams, I think, has provided something at the back end. But this offense, I got to – right now, Tom, I'm at a point where I have to see it to believe it.
Yeah.
I kind of believed it after L.A. I gave them the benefit of the doubt, and then they kneecapped me. So now it's like, until it's fixed and it rolls, I don't think – I can't say that they're going to do it.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And
I think they win, but it's just not going to be – it's not going to make a whole lot of people happy.
Right. Okay, well, be sure you check all our coverage through the weekend. We'll have a big preview on Sunday. And don't forget the live blog on Sunday where you can – curse out both Jim and I again and tell us what homers we are, because we won't demand that McCarthy is fired on the spot. You guys are starting to hurt our feelings, you know? You don't know that. I'm sensitive. Anyway, one of these days we'll let you in on what all that is like.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm going to start the music and say have a good weekend. See you after the game.
Yeah, see you Sunday night.
This podcast has been brought to you by Potawatomie Casino. Thursdays at Potawatomie, win a Caribbean cruise during the Island Time giveaway this November. More at paysbig.com. That's paysbig.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.